Where are your core memories? You know, the ones that you made maybe with mom and dad or a sibling or a grandmother or grandfather. I have a number of them that I think about from time to time. But I'm now in the stage of my life of making core memories for my own children. Those moments before bed, tossing stuffed animals around, making games to kind of keep the day going just a few minutes longer before they call it nighty-night. Sit back, grab yourself a cup of coffee or whatever it is that you're into. You're listening to America Emboldened with Greg Bolden here on the America Out Loud Network. Let's get emboldened.
America Emboldened.
Greg, I feel emboldened.
You don't know the founding fathers. You don't know what they did. You don't know what they sacrificed. We have lost touch with the principles in the Constitution. Nobody's read the Declaration of Independence. You are voting for socialism, and you got what you voted for.
Welcome, Bold Americans. Greg Bolden here from America Emboldened. I was thinking about these core memories after some things happened over the weekend. Well, and this is going to go into a few different avenues for conversation today and how this applies. When I go back to my childhood and I think about the things that I remember the most, I have memories with my brother playing things like paper football on a rainy, miserable day, listening to a football game of his high school, playing on the radio while we made up paper footballs for all NFL teams, and we played all day. I think about times playing soccer or my dad being out on the field as a coach early on in my soccer playing days. I think about moments of baseball playing in Wilmington, as well as for our school and the relationships that I formed with various people through those sports. I think about early memories, things with my parents going on vacation, being at the beach, being at my grandparents' house, the way that it felt to hug my grandfather and feel the rough edges of the stubble from his growing facial hair when I would go to hug him. I remember that he always had a walking stick and he would take me on these walks around a few blocks from his home after dinner. He would say, "All right, Scout, who's coming for a walk with me?" And normally it would be me, my brother, and our cousins. We'd go for a walk with our pop-pop. These core memories, in many ways, have helped shape me into the individual that I am in front of you doing this podcast and helping me inform my opinion of things in this world. These core memories have helped me with my own self-concept, the way that I view myself. That could be my beliefs, my values, what I believe that I'm able to do, what are my abilities, and really my sense of identity. You know, the more positivity that we have, psychological studies have shown that self-esteem that we grow with, that confidence that we grow with, that can really help us later in life. Those negative core memories, things that could be abusive, they lead to feelings of insecurity or an inadequacy that can follow people for many years. And I don't know what you are, Bold American, listening to this show, if you had lots of positive memories as a child, or maybe you had negative memories, but whichever one it was, it is not really important to how you must stay. See, one of the largest things that I believe that we can do is we have the ability to adapt and change the way that we experience the viewpoint of this world. Our psychological well-being, I think, absolutely depends on that. At some points in time in our life, we may look at things and feel a bit dull. We may not feel like we're seeing the world as vibrant as we saw through childlike eyes. Maybe our imagination dulls a little bit. Well, I did something a few weeks ago and I made a purchase, and I'm actually going to review this purchase over some shows, probably for the next year, because I think that this is worth documenting. About a year ago, last February, I installed solar panels on my home. And the reason I put these solar panels on was not to save the environment. It was not because I wanted to help end climate change. It was simply because I saw a world where I felt that the power companies might continue to increase the cost. And if I had solar, I could insulate myself from the rising cost from the companies and keep it steady for myself. What I didn't know at the time, the dirty little secret, and this is going to get into my other purchase, the dirty little secret that came out of all of this is that the electric companies are still charging a surcharge for solar companies, or not solar companies, solar customers, in order to use their infrastructure for the times where maybe the sun's not shining. So I have to pay the electric company no matter what every single month, taxes and fees, because of course, taxes and fees, the state always gets paid. So in many ways, while electric panels have helped me cut my electric bill from the months of March until about November, the months of November through about February, sometimes in the March, depending on how cold it is, the electric bill, and because of the way I am here in the Northeast, the sun is not shining nearly as much, and so I normally consume more electricity than I create. Now, at the end of a year, I am creating more than I consume overall, and so it is a wash. And so I'm pretty happy with that. Now, why did I purchase solar panels? Well, I looked into the cost of them, and what I discovered was there were a number of rebates available both through the state of Delaware, where I live, Delmarva Power, as well as a federal rebate as well through a tax credit that I could get. And so it made sense. Now, when I made that purchase, one of the things that I wanted to do as a core memory, as an experience for my family, was about several years ago, I test drove with my father a Tesla, a Model 3. And my father drove a Corvette. That was his, he never had flashy cars, but well, he did before he got married. But during the time that, you know, I've been alive, he had never had a flashy car until he retired from DuPont after 40 years. And his retirement gift to himself was a Corvette. Now, during this time, I actually had a 3000 GT VR4, and that car was my little baby that I got directly out of college. I found that thing used in really good condition, and that was a blast. And so my father and I both had our sports cars around the same time, and we'd go to the Corvette shows and have a good experience. So taking my father to go test drive this Tesla several years ago was a fun core memory experience for myself as well. Now, as my father has gotten older, his memory is not where it used to be. And the ability to make those type of core memories for both of us has diminished. But I did it. About 3 weeks ago, Elon Musk made an announcement. He said anyone that buys pre-existing inventory of a Tesla and takes delivery before March 1st will receive a discount on the vehicles. And so my wife's car had had engine problems ever since we got it. It was a Hyundai Tucson, and the knock sensor kept going on this car. And every time it would go, it endangered our family because the car's knock sensor would go and we couldn't go over 50 miles per hour. And finally, about a month and a half ago, when this thing went off, my wife was driving and a Walmart truck almost hit her from behind when she lost full power of the vehicle. So we took the car into the shop. I called Hyundai Motors. They refused to address the engine. They told me they have such an engine problem from those years of vehicles right now that I would probably be sitting for like 4 of the 5 months before they could get an engine for the vehicle. With that stated, they continued to reset the knock sensor, replace the catalytic converter for the third time, I believe it was, on that vehicle, and send us back on our way and told us, well, make sure they get only OEM oil filters, so that's not setting it off. Meanwhile, they know that their vehicles have a major engine issue from about 2015 until about 2021 on many of their models, including this Tucson. So when this happened, I said to my wife, we got to get rid of the vehicle. It's vital at this point in time. So Tesla with their sale, I decided to price it out. Now I don't have a ton of money to spend on a vehicle, and Teslas were super expensive last time I had looked, but there were some things that had changed in this experience. The car itself was a $52,000 vehicle, but the Tesla website for this vehicle, long range motor, everything else, was down to $45,000. After that, the $7,500 tax rebate was no longer something you had to wait until next year on your taxes to file. It was offered at the point of sale. The government would pay Tesla directly and use your rebate, and that would come off the purchase price of the car. My wife's job had $4,000 that were coming back, and the state of Delaware had an additional $2,500. Well, look, I'd like to tell you that I don't believe in big government. I'd like to tell you that I don't like giving out free money, but you know what? I don't believe that I'm getting free money from the government for all this. This is my tax dollars that I've paid in, and I'd much rather cash those tax dollars back out on a vehicle for my wife and myself and my family than continue to just watch my tax dollars be wasted, like, throwing missiles into the hands of Ukrainians or Palestinians or food down to the Gaza Strip and getting ourselves all involved, which, by the way, you might be sitting there and be like, well, what do you mean? You don't want humanitarian aid to these areas? Well, I would just like to believe that we could get some humanitarian aid in the United States first before addressing all those issues. But I digress. The beginning of the show is not about that topic. It is about the core memory experience and my review of having a Tesla. So I was pretty nervous. I ordered one. It came in just in time to get the full discount. And I got this vehicle, and then all the money comes in for just less than $30,000. And monthly payment, to which my wife felt was okay. Make a long story short, before I picked it up, I had some nervous things. People tell me all the time, you know, you're going to find the charging thing really cumbersome and it's not as good as a gas vehicle. And I was talking to an older man at the high school that I work at. He was walking our track, and I saw that he pulled up in a Model Y last week. And I said, excuse me, sir, do you have a few minutes just to talk to me for a second? I just want to ask you about your car. And he was like, oh, yeah, sure, absolutely. What do you want to know? I said, well, actually, I'm picking one up tomorrow on Friday. And give me the biggest positive that you can tell me about the vehicle and the biggest negative. And he said, well, I'm 64 years old. I've owned a lot of cars. The biggest positive I can give you is this is by far the best car I've ever owned. And the negative that I can give you is once you get your Tesla, everybody's going to tell you how bad Teslas are because they've never actually driven one and they know very little about electric vehicles. Well, I picked up my car on Friday. After picking it up, immediately somebody tells me, well, good luck not getting incinerated. I said, well, what do you mean? They said, oh, those things catch on fire all the time. And I was like, huh, do they? Must have missed that when I did my homework on it. But in all seriousness, I do understand Teslas get fires when batteries explode or they get in accidents. But are you aware that actually Teslas catch on fire at a lesser rate than an average vehicle when you average them together? And are you also aware how many Teslas were sold just in 2023 alone, their total sales? I don't think that people are aware of just how many vehicles were put out there. 1,808,581 in 2023 alone, 1.3 million in 2022. And so there's a lot of misinformation about electric vehicles. But I'm still nervous, right? So I get this thing and I'm driving it back down the turnpike. And what I discovered was a core memory. I discovered the excitement for something that felt fresh and felt new for the first time in a while. I discovered the joy when my kids saw the car. They thought I rented it. They're like, did you rent this car, Dad? I'm like, no, it's mine. And they're like, no, it's not. Where'd you rent it from? I'm like, no, it's the family car. And over the weekend, going to my kid's soccer game and traveling with my parents in the car, I gotta tell you, those memories that we make with our children, the experience of technology in a way that can actually bring people together is phenomenal. And so this experience that I've had over the last 72 hours has actually been very reinvigorating. And it's not about the car, actually. It's about the memories. See, I don't care if the car all of a sudden gets a scratch on it. I mean, yeah, I care. It's brand new, but I'll live. And all those fingerprints that my son might put on the screen or on the back of a seat, there's going to be a day one of these days that I don't get to have his fingerprints all over everything anymore. And the mud from the cleats that comes into the floor mats that I'm like, ah, brand new floor. Eventually, there'll be a day where my kids aren't playing those sports anymore. And I don't get to see the mud on the bottom there. And so whether it's a Tesla or any new vehicle that we have, look around your house. If you have young ones, this doesn't last forever. And they're waiting for us to make that memory with them. I think about all the time that I've wasted on a cell phone with my children present in the room with me, and I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed to think that there were times where they might have been little and looked over at me and saw me looking at a phone and might have gotten the impression that a cell phone would be more important than them. I'm ashamed of the times where I might have gotten a phone call and been like, hold on, I'll be right back. And they might have thought that a phone call is more important than them. But what I can do now is be mindful. Once you realize that there is this perception that your children may have that your parents didn't have to worry about because technology wasn't as advanced as it is now, then you can find ways to reconnect. Maybe that's sitting across from your daughter and letting her know that she is a beautiful person. She is special and unique and wonderfully made, that she's intelligent, that she's incredibly talented, that she's a gifted writer, a phenomenal soccer player, and telling your son the same type of things, what he means to you, the joy that you get when you see their face first thing in the morning, when they offer you a smile, when you give them a hug, or they give you a hug without being asked, or they tell you that they love you. See, your children are still creating those core memories with us, but there's sometimes these experiences we get in life, and that could be as simple as a new purchase of something that just brings joy, a pizza oven, so to speak. I know my wife got me a pizza oven, or I guess I should say us a pizza oven, for Christmas, and it's become a family tradition. Once a week now, we make our own dough, we make our own pizzas. My wife and I are competing to see who can make the best pizza pie for our children. And it's a fun little competition, and our kids are remembering it and making those core memories as well. So why do I share the story about this Tesla? Well, tonight it kind of hit me. I was thinking about why I was getting so much excitement from a vehicle, because that seemed kind of contradictory of who I am as an individual. And it really comes down to the family came together around something in an energized way where we all wanted to be a part of the same experience at the same time. Learning the new features on the screen. Tesla has the most craziest things that are out there. Has a little whoopee cushion, and you can make different seats make a sound of farting. And this made my 9-year-old son's absolute day. It has a light show that synchronizes to music, and the doors the windows start moving up and down the doors, the lights change and go all over, the back tailgate goes up and down during the show. And it's just one of those little fun things that we're discovering. And so here's the lesson here. Those core memories are about discovery. Now that could be going out into your backyard and discovering an ant colony. It could be going to an aquarium and discovering that there's fish and schools of fishes that like to hang out together. It could be going into the woods and discovering different species of plants and fauna, out into a hike. Be going to the beach and collecting seashells with your children and your significant other. It could be looking at the night sky and trying to identify stars on a star map. These are all opportunities for discovery. And when we're in a discovery mindset, the world gets more vivid. You know, none of us have a core memory of politics. None of us have a core memory of government. I don't think many of us would sit there and say, you know what my core memory is? My core memory of happiness is when Ronald Reagan said that trickle-down economics was going to be a gift to all. And I also don't think that it was a core memory of anybody when George W. Bush said, read my lips, no more taxes. I don't think it was a core memory when Bill Clinton started playing his saxophone on the Arsenio Hall show. Nor do I think it was a core memory when Bill Clinton said, I did not have sexual relations with that woman. I don't think it was a core memory when George Bush stood at the World Trade Center and said, I hear you, and soon the people who did this will hear you. I don't think it was a core memory when Barack Obama said, hope and change that we can believe in. I don't think it was a core memory at all when Donald Trump said, China. All right. And I don't think it's a core memory when Joe Biden said, come on, man. Look, we're focused on the wrong things as society. And I got a dirty secret to tell all of you that's going to hurt people that love this country. That dirty secret's this. America, as the experiment that we know and loved, or the romanticized Americanism, it's over. See, Michael Bednarik was correct when he said that the Constitution was, for all effects and purposes, already dead. See, people always talk about how, well, maybe this will be the election. This will be the time that things start changing around here. I don't think that is going to ever be the case again. Look at society and where it is. We have moved from a spot of understanding and relation with our neighbor and with others to a society that is completely turned upside down with moral relativism, and relativism just in a general sense. Now, why does relativism matter? Why am I telling people maybe we just need to find those new experiences, find those discoveries in life in order to maintain happiness, and maybe we need to discover what it means to have a new America? Right after the break, I'm going to get into that with you all. I know that's a long way around. I'm going to tell you all about that Tesla experience as I experience it, whether or not there's really charging issues or if that's overblown. And I'll let you know my thoughts. I'll be honest too. If I think that this was the worst decision I've ever made in the future, I will own it and I will talk about it. Just I say, like, you know, solar, I had no idea I was still going to have this bill from the electric companies. There are things to learn from. So we will get back to that, but not this show. Now I'm going to move over to the relativism side, the philosophical position that truth and morality are subjective. It's killing the United States and likely killing the world as well. There was a recent study of scientists, 200 scientists, in fact, at British universities. This is a study conducted by The Telegraph and CensusWide. 58% of respondents thought that sex is binary, except only in rare cases such as intersex individuals. There were 13% that had either no views on this or preferred not to answer. This tells me that perhaps the world and scientists have adopted, actually, it doesn't tell me perhaps, it tells me that yes, I'm correct. We have adopted a relativist view instead of embracing fundamental biological facts. This isn't a question about gender. It's a question about binary sex. And almost less than a little, half of the respondents can't answer that question. Oh my God, we are so screwed. So that leads me down this path of thinking. If the important things in life that really matter are our core memories, thinking about the things that went right in our life, why are so many people now voting and choosing a socialist Marxist agenda? I had somebody on Instagram recently write that about the beginning of my show, Michael Benarck, saying you're voting for socialism and you got what you voted for. They said, I wish that socialism was on the ballot. I believe that this is a larger part of the relativist viewpoints that are out there in the world. So I wanted to cover maybe the first part of this. This might get a little long, just as much as the first half of the show, but that's okay. I want to cover it the best of my ability to try to get into DEI a bit and why equity is a lie. See, the conversation that I was just having about sexuality, right, or sex around gender, has elements of relativism in relation to the culture that you grow up in, societal norms, and the individual perspectives now on these topics, of which, where did they come from? Well, inclusion, making sure everybody feels included, equity, making sure it's all equitable for everybody, and celebrating the diverse world of gender fluidity that's out there. But again, that's not what this question's about. It's about whether sex is binary, except for intersex cases. And half these doctors could not answer the question. That tells me that we have a real problem with culture, society, and individual perspective. We have, of course, a cultural variability that could be whether you were raised in a church or not raised in a church. It could have something to do about some of the norms that you grew up with, who raised you. Maybe you grew up in a same-sex family, and so maybe you have a different viewpoint based upon your individual experience. Now, relativism acknowledges that culture or context vary widely across all societies. But then that means that relativism isn't truth. It means it's truthy. We then get the subjective experience, right? There are the things that we've lived through. And so people can experience gender and sexuality through a subjective manner that are based upon factors like your personal identity, your upbringing, right? And so when we're talking about the subjective truth versus the objective truth, it leads me down kind of a rabbit hole of where does that stand in the regards to talking about relativism, right? If objective means it's verifiable information based on facts, and subjective means it's based upon feelings, opinions, and emotions, where's the truth in this conversation? And so the subjectivity of experience means it's also not dealing with facts. It's dealing with this odd truthiness that's based upon our feelings. Then relativism can also go into the diversity, right, of life, the fluidity. They talk about fluidity of gender and sexuality, and talking about that we can acknowledge that there's all these aspects of our human identity across spectrums, and that we're not in these fixed categories, that they are too rigid understandings talking about binary when we get down to this. Well, again, this comes from a subjective place. It does not come from an objective truth. It comes from feelings. Relativism leads us in there. And that leads us ultimately to what relativism wants you to do, which is to challenge the norms in society. It critiques the dominant cultural norms and makes assumptions about, in this case, we're talking gender and sexuality. It then questions whether or not there is a universal principle that should be applied to all, and then we'll use history in a rewritten form to create a social construct so they can challenge that norm. And they use that to create the dialogue and the activism that helps challenge what they call oppressive norms, all in order to promote inclusivity and acceptance. And then we get the ethical implications of relativism. And in this case, it raises ethical questions. Treating marginalized groups for, you know, justice, making sure people aren't discriminated against. Talk about the cultural diversities. Talk about treating people with dignity, treating people with equality. Regardless of whatever your sexual orientation is or your gender identity, I guess, is what we're going to call this here. But relativism does not stop there. Relativism then goes all throughout the diversity of the issues that we have in this country. This is not a conversation about gender fluidity. I'm simply asking, how is it that 50% of scientists are unable to answer an objective truth? Well, it's because relativism is not based on any facts in any traditional sense whatsoever, which tells me now that science is activating itself and really relying now on a subjective truth. That's dangerous. Science is not meant to be subjective. It's supposed to be hypothesis, fact-based, and evidence-based. Now, science is a philosophical perspective. It's now a theory that proposes this is, could be the truth because how we feel, this morality that might be out there, could be there, meaning things are no longer absolute, but instead relative to perspectives, culture, and historical circumstances, societal norms, all to help us become a more equitable and just society. See, relativism then would juxtapose upon a valid philosophical position, I guess you could say, in talking about a diverse human experience, because yes, you can't argue with that. We have diverse experience depending where you live, your background, socioeconomic, and the complexity of maybe the moral judgments that people have grown up with, churched, unchurched, what's right, what's wrong. All that comes into the viewpoints. However, when you get down to it, what is the end goal of relativism? Is it to create a new reality, a new America that is in Marxism? It's in socialism, rooted in equity for all and feelings? Or are we going to take the objective knowledge that we have and risk being judged as morally problematic to other cultural practices simply because people feel uncomfortable? They feel harmed or hurt by their feelings. Oh my God, we're attacking somebody's feelings. Well, yeah, this is a tough philosophical question. It is complex, I get that. But I believe that it is causing major issues in the way that somebody would say, you know what we need? We need to have socialism on the ballot. Well, you know, there are people that are currently advocating for socialism to be on that ballot. See, there are people that believe that socialism is going to come in because capitalism is just nothing but a horror story. It's something that we have tried before, and greed has ruined the world. But Milton Friedman, I was sent a clip of him during a 1979 interview with Phil Donahue. And he says that, you know, you think Russia doesn't run on greed? You think China doesn't run on greed? What is greed? He says that, of course, none of us want to believe that we're greedy. It's only the other person who's a greedy person, right? And he says the world runs on individuals that are pursuing separate interests. Countries wanting that. And he says the great achievements of civilizations did not come from government bureaus. Einstein didn't construct his theory under order from a bureaucrat. He says that Henry Ford didn't revolutionize the automobile industry that way. In the only cases in which the masses have escaped from the kind of grinding poverty, the only cases in recorded history are where they had capitalism and free trade. And so he goes on to say, if you want to know what is going on, what's the worst off, it's actually the kind of societies that depart from capitalism. And so recorded history has made it absolutely crystal clear that there's no alternative way so far that's been discovered, improving the life of ordinary people and having productive lives, except what's unleashed by a free enterprise system like capitalism. So why are we in a relative state saying we need equity? Well, I think we may know why that's happening at this point in time. See, socialists have their own beliefs where they think that, you know, well, petty theft shouldn't be theft. And so theft at a CVS, at a Walgreens in California, might promote the idea that we need equity, also known as socialism. It could mean that if we abolish capitalism, then you get equity. Then you'll get no crime because everybody's provided for and you'll need no police. And so private property must be evil. But our rights and our freedoms come from our ability to have private property. They come from the idea of capitalism, free market enterprise, in order to get yourself up and out. So what's the odds that this diversity, equity, and inclusion in all of these businesses is not really about being good about people's feelings, but instead it is corporate looking at a way to upheaval the United States the rest of the way. See, Michael Benarek was right. The Titanic is sinking, and it's now up to us to get on the life rafts of liberty and to try to save as many people as possible. The country likely cannot be saved in the way that you and I would want. So at what point is this country going to decide it's time to start fighting back against those that would like to put the final dagger into what's left of the beating heart of the Constitution? Well, if you look at Carlin, and one of her posts just recently, she had a scoop from a meeting back at the Revolutionary Communist of America at the Marxist School in New York City, October 7, 2023, that is openly calling for an insurrection of America. They not only are calling for an insurrection, they are planning how they get branches and cells into every workplace, every union, every college campus, and every neighborhood. Carlin Borisenko goes on to not just show the video, but show the flyers for recruitment to the Communist Party, which, by the way, had 2.3 million views, the New Revolutionary Communist Political Party. Who are these 2.3 million people? Because I'm pretty sure that my grandfather fought against people like you in World War II. I'm pretty sure we took up arms. And so I'm just going to ask a very peaceful question on behalf of the government. When will it be time to take up arms against these 2.3 million people? When will it be time to make sure that these individuals don't have an actual insurrection, not what happened on January 6th, but people that are telling you, this is our plan. This is how we're going to overthrow the United States and cause a wave that will be felt throughout the entire globe. Ladies and gentlemen, this is out there for you to see. I've reposted this on my X feed if you want to watch the entire speech. This guy is talking about the Bolsheviks as if they are the greatest thing since sliced bread. One of my listeners, it's funny because I knew what I was doing on, but he wrote something, you're voting for the Bolshevism, and you got what you voted for. And the irony is, I had looked at this video and I'm going, yeah, there's people that do want to vote for that right now. Why? Because it's about our feelings. It's about the subjectiveness of what's going on in this country. People are weak-minded. They don't understand where their rights come from. It's not from some paper called the Constitution. Your rights don't come from any government bureaucrat whatsoever. The United States does not grant you any rights as a citizen. It protects your rights as outlined of what the framers knew that every man, child, and woman should have as an opportunity. And immediately, the best you can do is say, yeah, but black people, when they framed it, were 3/5 of a person. Then you also don't understand the way that the Constitution developed in order to become a more perfect document, even though it was imperfect. But I can tell you, if 2.3 million people are signing up at the Revolutionary Communist of America Marxist School in New York City over this new Revolutionary Communist political party, the country's already dead. Right? This should never, ever be allowed to happen. Where's the outrage on MSNBC over this? I mean, they're marching openly with red flags, red communist flags in Brooklyn, New York City, just several days ago. Ladies and gentlemen, the country is not only under attack, the country is in clear and present danger. So let's go back. Let's go back to the core memories at the beginning of the show. What did I say I discovered life was really about? I said it was about discovery. So perhaps what we need to do is discover once again what makes this country great. Discover once again the true history of my grandparents, and perhaps your grandparents or great-grandparents, and what they sacrificed for in order to make sure that I could do this show, you could have a free spot to listen to it, and to make sure that we can have dialogue for what comes next. Now, our core memory shouldn't be about government. Our priorities would be all screwed up if that was the case. But we should be focused on the discovery of what will make this country great in the future for future generations, and so that others can benefit the way that we have benefited as well. There is an attack right now that would like to make sure it's more about equity, because that puts us underneath a Marxist agenda. Inclusion. Right? I'm not talking about inclusion of being kind to others that might be different. It's about inclusion of forcing people into roles that they're clearly not qualified to have. And I could share some really concrete examples about that I saw recently, but I'm going to bite my tongue on that right now just for the sake of individuals' well-being. Maybe I'll get into that a little bit later. Look, on Wednesday, if all goes according to plan, I'm going to have a great interview for you all. I often talk about Michael Bednarik and how great I believe that he is, or was. Victor Neves, I don't even want to call him a kid, because for all I know, he's in his 20s now, but he looked like a kid to me when I'm watching. And of course, I'm getting old here. But I'm watching this video of him talking about the Constitution, talking about the public education system and the Declaration of Independence. And it's the closest thing I think I've saw of a young person taking up a passion and perspective of a young Michael Bednarik. And so I have some hope here of discovery. I have some hope that maybe there are individuals that recognize what's going on, and maybe that is that new vision for the future. So Victor Neves will be joining me on Wednesday on the show. You're not going to want to miss it. Hope I honored your time well, and I hope that you guys have a great week. I'll be back with you on Wednesday. Be bold, America.